Welcome to Women in the Middle Entrepreneurs, the podcast that gives you an unfiltered, behind-the-scenes look at what it's really like being a woman in the middle who's over 50 and following her entrepreneurial dreams. Grab a superhero cape, girlfriend, because you deserve one. I'm your host, Master Certified Life Coach and Midlife Mentor, Susie Rosenstein, and I am excited to inspire you with interviews that feature all of this midlife amazingness. Let's go. Hey there, welcome back to the show. We have another really exciting interview ahead of us about how having a career in sales and then coaching led to happiness as an entrepreneur. Today, you'll be meeting Stacy Hyland, a woman in the middle entrepreneur who's on a mission to give entrepreneurs back to their families and help them do that by helping them scale and add a zero without the hustle. And we all know what that means. But it's so difficult to apply it. So welcome to the show, Stacy. Thanks so much for joining us today.
Thanks, Susie. I'm really excited to be here. I think this is a fabulous podcast topic you guys have here.
Oh my gosh, I know it. I just don't think enough people are talking about this. So I know we're going to have a great conversation about your midlife entrepreneur story. We're going to be talking about your business and what's going really well, and also what midlife issues might be getting in your way to some extent, maybe a little, maybe a lot, and might be challenging for you in your life as well as being a business owner. So let's get started the way I love to start these things. How old are you? How long have you been an entrepreneur? A little bit about your entrepreneurial story, and of course, what it is that you do in the world. So take it away.
Sure. I'm 51 years old and I am a business coach. I help high achieving women add a zero without the hustle. And the way it started is I had been in sales all of my life. My dad was one of those super motivating, always entrepreneurial type people. And I read my first sales book when I just found it because we're packing to move. And I found it. And I was probably 11 when I read my first sales book.
Really? Wow. I haven't heard that before.
Yeah, and it's so funny because it's so 70s style, like the cover and everything. But what happened is I started selling to fuel my love of travel. So when I was in third grade, I started selling stationery. I bought it at wholesale and then I sold it at retail prices to all of my neighbors. And that fueled my first trip to see my aunt in Sugarloaf in Maine to go ride her horse, which was like my dream come true for a week to be riding a horse all the time. And then by the time I was in fifth grade, I was selling B2B. So I still have my picture, like with my first check of me selling to a restaurant, and very exciting. So I was really kind of a nerd from very early. And so I was selling all the time. I sold to be able to go to France as an exchange student in high school, had my own business doing that. And then afterwards, I ended up going into sales, sold life insurance. I was one of the top producers there from my very first day. I was number two in the country my first day. I loved it. It was fun. I thought sales was fun. And then in my last sales position, I was selling in the beauty industry, and it was fun. I liked the clients. I liked helping them. And I liked the freedom to be on the road and set my own schedule and all that. And I was making a lot of money. But what happened at the time was my dad got diagnosed with cancer. And that was in September. And by the American Thanksgiving, my dad passed away the day before Thanksgiving. Oh. And he was 56 years old. So I know for us now, that's like, oh my gosh, that's super, super young. And so what it did is it really made me reflect on like, what was my calling? What was I doing with my life? Like, how was I contributing? Like, what was going to happen? My dad, when he passed away, he had like a full house funeral. Like people were standing at the back of the church. I mean, that's, he had impacted a lot of people because his life, he had helped a lot of people through sales, increase their livelihoods, be able to, you know, provide for their families and all that. And for me, he was my mentor. Like he would practice with me sales stuff. He would be like, you could be the first female president if you want to, which hardly anybody wants that job. But but it really like, it just like the sun and the moon, it just like, boom, like I was so depressed. I didn't know what to do. And so I really went within and did a lot of soul searching. I belong to a center for spiritual living that really looked at, like, what do you want in life? What do you want to get out of it? I read books. One of the best books I read on the subject was the book Callings. I don't remember the author off the top of my head, but it just really looked at what can I be doing? And at the same time, when I was in the sales job, I was really helping coach the business owners. So I would go into their business and I would say, well, have you tried this? Or what about that? And I started helping people grow their businesses. One of my clients grew her business 200% in a year. And so I was like, there's something to this. And so that's really what made me look at coaching. I attended Thomas Leonard, who was the father of coaching. I attended his RV tour to see about coaching. And I was really in on the beginning of coaching. And people used to ask me, what sport do you coach? And, you know, it was really an educational process because no one even knew what a coach was back then.
Right.
How I ended up in coaching is that really it was just, I feel like my first brand was Business Optimizer Coach because my client said to me, Stacy, you're not just a coach. You're always helping us optimize everything. And so that's where it just kind of, it was a natural thing that I couldn't see things in a negative way. Like it wasn't like, oh, there's something wrong with you or something wrong with your business. It was like, ooh, have you thought of this? Or what about that? And ways to improve things in a positive light. And that's what brought me to coaching.
That's so interesting. Now, in your notes, you also mentioned that because of your dad's influence and that he died with a lot of regrets, that you steered your and designed your business in a certain way. You want to talk a little bit about that?
So when I first started my business, I didn't have any kids. But I knew that I wanted to be here when my kids got off the school bus. I knew I wanted to, you know, go on their field trips with them. I knew I wanted to be able to be involved with them during the summer, that I didn't want to have to work, go to an office. So I really designed my schedule so that I could be 9 to 3, so that I was taking, you know, between 10 and 12 weeks off per year. So that, you know, whenever they had a spring break or Christmas break, or, you know, my oldest daughter, she was a competitive gymnast and she was national gymnast. So lots of travel, lots of appointments, lots of that. And so I was able to actually, while she trained with the United States Olympic coach in Massachusetts. And when she went to do that, I hosted a VIP day with a client in Boston, you know, so I really designed it so that I could be there. My other daughter, she's in theater. So again, a lot of things that go along with that, that I really want to be able to be here for them. And the fact that my dad died so young and he had so many regrets, those were things that he didn't spend the time with us. Right. And so I thought, like, always chasing the money leads to a lot of regrets at the end. And I guess I was lucky because it came to me at 26 when my dad died, but I was like, I'm not doing that. And I also don't want to perpetuate that in the hustle culture. So I know in the last, I would say 2 years since the pandemic, anti-hustle is really big, but I've been doing anti-hustle for over 20 years. So it's nothing new. Like, you really can design your business that way and still have it be very prosperous and abundant.
So good. And I have to say, it's pretty catchy, this adding a zero without the hustle.
Well, thank you. Well, how that came to be is that I looked at, you know, all of my successful clients. What was I really helping them do? And I've helped clients go from 0 to 6 figures. I've helped clients go from 6 to 7. And then I've also helped clients go all the way from 6 figures to 8 figures. Wow. So, I mean, that's what they want. They're like, okay, I want to get to the next level. And it just depends on where you are, what that next level looks like. So adding a zero pretty much covers it.
It's a very succinct and catchy way to talk about what you're doing. I love it. It's like a sneak attack on what's really the bottom line, you know? All right. Now, one of the things that I get very excited about on these podcasts is, you know, kind of something that's a bummer for many of us. But the reason I'm excited about it is not that it's a bummer, but it's because it's so important that we figure it out and that we talk about it more. And that is the collision of what's going on in midlife with women trying to run businesses when they're over 50. So these classic midlife issues. So can you talk a little bit about some of the way classic midlife challenges have affected you when you're running your business? I know one thing you mentioned was energy.
Yeah, it's interesting because I think there's more talk now about women with younger kids, right? That's hard. Obviously, I've been through that. What's less talked about is like, what happens when they're teenagers? What happens when they're in their 20s? What happens when your parents are getting older, that they need support? And so I think this is a really valid conversation. And I think for me, the energy loss has been, well, first of all, I had surgery last year at the, like 2 days before Christmas. They're like, you can have surgery now. Take it. And I'm like, okay, I will take it. And so I had one of those fun women's surgeries and got cysts removed. But before then, it was like very, you know, I would be in pain a lot. And so I never knew when I was going to have a flare up of pain. And so I really, I would say in the last few years, held back on a lot of things because I was like, okay, do I really want to be on stage and not be able to stand up straight, right, from pain?
Wow. Yeah. Yeah.
So that was a problem. And then just like the energy of not being able to sleep. It's so funny, just with the schedule of this podcast, I've been taking some supplements and they've really been helping. But like just last night, I had a night with like a million hot flashes that was like, are you kidding me? Like, just let me sleep. Just let me sleep.
And we're recording later in the afternoon, so you're probably having a dip now of energy.
You know what? I don't really have dips of energy anymore. I think, oh,
amazing.
I think I've really regulated that with the supplements, and I've stopped eating bread and things at lunch that kind of like woo your energy. So I think that's really helped. So
wow, that's great. Another thing you mentioned. Oh, sorry. Repeat that. Sorry.
It's not to say I'll never eat a piece of bread again, but I really am more, even when my kids were little, I would always pay attention to my brain and how it was feeling. And I would say, you know, my clients are paying me for my brain, so I need to make sure I'm getting enough sleep. And so that's where like nutrition, energy management is so important.
Yeah, it really, really is. And it's kind of like it seems like this stuff pops up out of nowhere, but it's been building for years and we just haven't noticed it, you know? I remember when my first kid went to university, it felt like, oh my God, where did the 18 years go? And I'm like, well, it's been creeping up, but here it is. It's just so funny. The whole time perspective is crazy.
All the bread and muffins over the pandemic crept up because my daughter that loves to bake. And so it's kind of like, you know, you don't want to say no thank you because it's like she just made all, like she's trying all these new recipes and is so excited. So I'm like, sure, let me try some of that. So
it's so funny. One of my sons, same thing. That's exactly what was going on here as well. In the pandemic, he's criticizing me. Your flour's not fresh enough. I'm like, okay, let's do whatever you want. So funny. Now, speaking of teenagers and young adults, you mentioned that there have been some hard spots there too when it comes to managing business. So certainly I kind of know what you're talking about, but I would love for you to explain it.
Yeah, it's interesting because I think when they're younger, you have like blips of like they have a healthcare problem, you know, or they're sick or something. But I feel like, you know, they say older kids, you know, bigger kids, bigger problems. And I feel like emotionally, you need to be there so much more for kids that age.
Yes, 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 yes.
I homeschooled my daughter, who's now 15, for 2 years, like during the pandemic, because it was here where we're located. It was like schools are open, schools are closed, schools are open, schools are closed. I'm like, that's not working. And I wanted to be able to be at our, we had just built a lake house in New Hampshire, so I wanted to be there as much as possible. And if we had to stay at home for 2 weeks every time we went to the lake house to see my, you know, and see the rest of my family, that wouldn't work. So we homeschooled. She did really well in the homeschooling, but then this year she returned to school, severe bullying, like talking, getting the kids suspended. I mean, like really, you know, coming home crying every day, really depressed. And there's nothing like having a really bubbly, my youngest daughter, she's like the little Renaissance child. Like she's always creating art and she wrote 2 books during the pandemic. She's so creative and just joyful. And like the joy just drained out of her eyes, like drained. And that was so painful for me to see. So I felt like just so much more like being there and the emotional ups and downs that she was going through really impacted me. Like I was so sad. And then with my older daughter, she was a national level gymnast and she broke her back.
Oh my God.
Yeah. And so she's been training with Olympic coaches. She's gone to training camps with Olympic coaches from several different countries, broke her back, needed a lot of support, a lot of driving back and forth. But then she made it all the way back to national level and she ended up having to quit because she was just in too much pain. And then for somebody who she's been national level since she was 8. So for her whole life, all the sacrifice, all the things that she missed out on, and then having that just go, it was a really rough road. Her last year of high school, she had to change schools and go to a brand new school, no sports program. So, I mean, just like the mom heartstrings, that's the part that I find the hardest to manage, because I feel like when you have those really sad heartstring moments, it's like, okay, I gotta get motivated. And it's okay when I'm on with a client, right? Or when I'm on with a podcast, because it's like this energetic exchange. It's more the back end of my business that's like, oh, I have to get the energy up to do this, right? When you're feeling the sadness, that's what I find the hardest part of it.
Oh, that's so interesting. I thought you were going to say more of the, like, I've noticed that too with my family. And when that kind of stuff's going on, it's harder for me to do a Facebook Live, for example. Some of the visibility issues, it's like podcast, I can turn it on. Nobody's looking at me. But if I was just crying, and my face is blotchy, it's not as easy if there's a video. But I guess like all, I do know what you mean though about bookkeeping, for example. Like sometimes you think, oh, well, I can watch TV while I'm doing that. It doesn't take that much energy, but it does require focus. So sometimes you just want downtime, or you just want to do another phone call or a text or just rest because it's exhausting. Yeah. So I'm really glad you pointed it out that way. It's not always the obvious thing. In terms of the way we're affected with energy.
And I think it's also that creativity muscle, because some people would argue that I am an artist, but I never felt like I was an artist, but I'm extremely creative. And so what I felt happening is like that creative part of my brain was really shriveling up because I just didn't have any bandwidth to allow that to blossom. And, you know, those ideas that are always pinging around when you're in the shower.
Yes.
They were not theirs.
My God, Stacey, you're in my head. That's exactly, I would have said the exact same thing you said. That is really, really true. Creativity can be a great way to help you relax. But if you're not motivated to at least allow yourself the time to do the thing you know will help you, then it's not going to happen. It's just not going to happen. Now, another thing that you mentioned in your notes is that you have stronger boundaries, less striving, and more focus on what you want. Tell me a little bit more about having stronger boundaries.
Yeah. So I think what happens is when you're newer in business, you allow those boundaries to stretch, right? So that you allow clients to take more time or more than what's allowed on the contract, right? And you're just giving, 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 giving. So I think once you set those boundaries, then it's very respected. So like my clients have access to me on Voxer, but they know that I'm not going to answer it at night. They know I'm not going to answer it on the weekend. There's a boundary in place there. Now, it's not to say like one of my clients said he was selling his company and there was like a big negotiation and it was like, we needed like a Friday night emergency meeting at like, he was in the West Coast. So it was like 9 o'clock on a Friday night. I'm going to be there for that. But right. For the most part, it's like when you let those boundaries get stretched, you resent that. Right. And so yes. I think that's really important to not let those become resentment points, because then you don't like your business. You don't like your life as well. And I think the other boundaries are with the family, right? Of like, okay, this is work time. And they know that it's work time. The door is shut. I'm on, right? It's my time to do my thing. It's not just dad's time to do his thing.
Right. That is a good one. That's a really good one. Okay. Now I know that you have a book coming. So tell me about the book. Is it out or is it coming?
Well, I'm really excited about it. So
what's it called?
Hidden Profits, More Clients and Cash.
Mm.
And it actually came... I worked with Tony Robbins and Chet Holmes in their business mastery brand as vice president of consulting and coaching. And what happened there, I attended the very first business mastery event that they did live. And it was so fun to see because that was like one of the first events that Gary Vee ever spoke at. I mean, it was that, like, literally, like, it was Tony Robbins in a room without a bodyguard, you know, like, it was. Wow. And so the time of this event, when they launched, it was right after, during the last recession. And so what happened was people had paid $10,000 to be at this event. They interviewed everybody that was there. I think it was a crowd of like 300 or 400 people. So very small for a Tony event. And what happened is this gentleman stood up and he said, "I've tried everything. Nothing works," right? A lot of us can relate to that with all sorts of things in our lives.
Yes.
And so Tony said, "Okay." And the guy's standing there for coaching. And he said, "Well," Tony said, "well, what have you tried?" And the guy said, "Well, I've tried this and this and this." And so Tony said, "Okay, so you've tried like 3 things, not everything. How many times did you try?" And the guy's like, "Well, I tried for a little while, but then I just, you know, I couldn't do it anymore." And Tony said, "Well, why?" And the guy said, "Well, I ran out of like money, resources to do these things." And so Tony asked him, he said, "Have you ever seen someone that was less, that came to this country new, right? They had $200 in their pocket, that they have had less resources than you, that have become more successful than you?" And the guy said, you know, and everybody in the audience is like, "I can't believe this guy just told Tony he did everything and he did 3 things." They're like, "Ah, what's Tony?" And the guy said, "Yeah, like you see these immigrants that come over, they don't have English language skills. They can't write as well. They don't have the money. They don't have the network. They don't have the credit, right? They don't even know like the climate of like what their ads should say or things like that. And they become multimillionaires, billionaires." And so Tony said, "So it's not a lack of resources that's stopping you. It's a lack of resourcefulness. It's a lack of resourcefulness." So I was sitting there in the back of the room and I was like, "Oh," because I had clients at that point that were in the recession that were really, really struggling because their bank line of credits were shut down. Whole divisions were like, they couldn't sell anymore. It was really rough. And so what I said is, how can I become more resourceful for my clients? Like, what can we do in terms of strategies that they can make more money with less resources? And that's how Hidden Profits was born. So we looked at those strategies that you could do with, you know, a limited amount of team without doing any more marketing. And for most of the Hidden Profits in the book, they're free. And the average small business, they find at one of my live events, they find $85,000 of Hidden Profits in their business. And some find way more depending on the size of your business, but almost every single business has Hidden Profits that they're just not seeing.
Stacy, that sounds so much fun. Oh my God. Super, super fun. Okay. What would you say is the most surprising thing about being a midlife woman over 50 and being an entrepreneur? What's surprising? What's a positive thing?
I would say it's like you have like more motivation. You know, I feel like in my early 20s, I had a lot of motivation, but from that point, it was more striving, right? Like I mentioned before, like I felt like I had to do it. I was like chasing it. And I feel like now success is more of like stepping into what I am, stepping into my message, stepping into my zone of genius, and not worrying about like what the way to do it is. It's funny because we're moving and I have like boxes all around me right now. And I had like 12 bookshelves at least full of books. And some of those were double loaded with 2 lines of books. And I've really been able to release a lot of them because I'm like, you know what? I don't need to go back. I really have ingrained the things. I'm living the things in my life, in my business. So I don't need to go back and fix it and reread it. So that was really freeing to be like, oh, okay, I got this stuff. It's like inside. I own it now.
Right. It's not on a bookshelf. It's more just part of your essence in your zone of genius. Oh, that, I love that analogy. And you also mentioned in terms of the negative stuff, it's the kids needing more emotional stuff. Yes.
It's just that I find it that I want them to be happy, right?
Yeah.
We want our kids to be happy and we can't fix it for them.
No, right? We can't.
The other thing is my kids having grown up with me as a coach their whole life, they know, okay, how are you going to change your mindset? Like, what can you do instead? You know, like they have the tools, but they don't want mom to do the tools on them, right? Or coach right. them. Like, take off my coach hat and go into the mom hat, which, you know, can be challenging because you're like, if you would just do this, it would be so much easier.
And it's unpredictable when stuff's going to pop up too. So the timing may not be easy for you to go into mom mode and be patient and very available. Yes. You know, yeah, it can be very tricky. That's for sure. So would you say that your book, Hidden Profits, More Clients and Cash, is one of the main things you're working on now?
Yes, definitely. And then I am also working, I just re-released my podcast, which is Optimize Your Business and Your Life. So again, it's merging the business and life together because I don't think one should be at the expense of the other. And then I have a new workshop series that's coming out, Scale Without Hustle. So that's exciting. So I have lots of things percolating and that's really exciting.
Yeah, definitely. And how can people best find you and this stuff, this new stuff?
I am Stacy Hyland everywhere. Hyland, help you leverage everything now. That's the easy way to spell it because it's a weird Swedish swelling, and Stacy with an EY. So you can go to my website, Stacy Hyland, or on any of the socials, Stacy Hyland. I also do have a resource for people called More Clients and Cash because everybody wants more of that. So it's just moreclientsandcash.com. And you can get this free resource that really takes you through. If I was looking at your business and we were on the Zoom together, what would I say? Hey, here's some spots that you can just boop, add some clients, add some cash. And so that resource has all of that there for you.
Oh, that's really good. And I forgot to ask the other half of that other question. Sorry about that. And so I asked you about the negative stuff. What about the positive stuff that you're focusing on? I know you've got a move in your near future. You're surrounded by boxes. I can't see any of them on Zoom. But what's going on with moving?
Yeah. So we have been in this house for me, I think it's 22 years and my husband longer than that. And so we've loved this house. We keep kind of, we've renovated it. We've added on. My husband's actually grown up in this little town. He's never lived anywhere else in his life.
Wow. And where is it? Where's the town?
Outside of Montreal, a little French village. And then we built our lake house in New Hampshire. And so we thought we were going to move there and that didn't quite. So now we're still having two houses. So we're moving more east to a town that's, we're buying a house, another house that's lake access. So our other house is like right on the lake. This one, it's like 3 minutes from the lake, but water is really important to me. I've grown up here. We're around water wherever, like it's a 2 minute walk to the water. So I'm really excited that I'm creating that. And the house is also like 8 minutes from the ski slope in a national park. So I feel like the energy is really good there. We're going to be an hour away from my stepdaughter, who's a lawyer. We're going to be a half hour away from my daughter, who's going to university. And my youngest is moving into a new school that has an amazing theater program. So it's really exciting to like say, okay, what are we creating next? What's going to happen? So it's fun.
And oh, I love that.
It's 2 hours closer to the lake house. So that's going to gain us days per year, like probably weeks per year of not driving. So I'm really excited about that.
That's huge. I love that. I really, really love that. So I know one of the things that you mentioned is that you love being interviewed and you love creating the magic that unfolds as we're talking back and forth. And I really did pick up a lot of energy and this conversation was very easy. Why do you love being interviewed?
It's funny. Like I said, I was pretty much a nerd from like elementary school. And I think so when I was in seventh, eighth grade, I was in the NFL, the nerdy NFL, which is the National Forensic League. And so, it's true. It's the nerdy NFL.
That's hilarious. Okay.
Forensic League is focused on speaking, like debate, extemporaneous speaking, improv. And so if I could do it when I was 14 and like the geekiest looking, like weird perm, you know, all that prep school full of the cutest boys, right? I figure now when I'm like happy with myself and confident in myself, I remember one of the extemporaneous speaking that they said, you know, why are school buses yellow? And you had like 30 seconds to prepare your response and go in front of everybody and give your presentation. So I really like that energy. And I feel like it allows the creativity to come up that's ping-ponging around. And also I find that it helps me increase my ripple effect, right? So whatever we come up with, this magic that we create, because you're an excellent interviewer. So that's,
thank you.
I've been on gazillion podcasts that are not quite as fun as this. And so I think that magic, like people have a little aha, little pings, little light bulbs going off. And so that ripple effect of like, okay, we're only on this universe once, as we are, that we know, right? And so it's like, I want to make an impact. I want to help people. I want to help people, you know, give entrepreneurs back to their family. So there's not these little girls crying because, you know, their dad isn't ever home at night because he's always working. They're going on vacation without their dad. I know it sounds like a small thing, but it's like, huge. You know, on your deathbed and you're looking back and you're like, oh, I didn't spend as much time as I wanted with my family. I don't want my entrepreneurs to go through that at all.
No, that's no good. That's no good at all. You know, probably another reason that you like to be interviewed is because you're into sales. Like you're good at speaking, you're good at listening, you're good at helping. And that's really what a podcast interview is all about. There's a lot of listening, a lot of telling stories, a lot of helping. I think it's all those skills that you have. It's probably why.
Well, and it's funny because I tell my kids, you know how they're like, well, I don't know what I'm going to be when I grow up. And I said, well, you don't need to know what you want to be when you grow up, because I said, it's going to evolve. And I think you just need to keep moving towards the things that you love, things that give you energy, positive energy. And I think, you know, when I look at when I was a kid, what I wanted to be when I grew up, it was like, I wanted to be a guidance counselor, a psychologist. I wanted to be a newscaster. I wanted to be Barbara Walters, right? So an actress, you know, Nancy Drew, a detective. So I'm like finding those hidden profits. So it's like literally all the things that I'm doing now are integrated with like all of the things. The only thing that it isn't really integrated is I'm not like an Olympic horseback rider. So
not yet.
Oh, you know, those Olympic horseback riders, they're like 70 years old. So there's
oh my gosh, can you imagine? You know what? Speaking of news reporters, I had Joan London on my other podcast and I flipped my lid. I mean, to have her pop into my Zoom square and have a chance to talk to her with all of her experience and decades interviewing, you know, presidents and Olympiads and all the Olympics. And oh, it was really exciting, I have to say.
Amazing. And I think we like grew up watching her like on the TV before we left for school, you know, like,
yeah.
And saw her, like you said, through the Olympics, through all of these big emotional events in our lives. So it was kind of an emotional tie of like seeing her probably when the Challenger exploded, you know, with the presidential elections, you know, all of those things are really tied together.
Yeah, we were definitely having lots of memories. We were very focused on the TV back in those days, for sure. Well, Stacey, this has been a lot of fun. Really, thank you so much for taking the time of your day and for sharing all of this. And I really appreciate how, I don't know, that experience with your dad is really sticking out. I'm so sorry he passed so young, but that he was so inspirational for you and that you picked up a lot of skills before you even knew that you were picking up skills, you know, and that you noted his regrets. And one thing as midlife women that's so important is that we, what I call it, is regret-proofing your life. We do everything we can to make sure that we do the things so that we don't have regrets, because we have that power now, but we're not going to have the same power later. And oh, I hate that your dad died with regrets, but that you are working actively to make sure that you don't have any regrets.
Yeah. And it's interesting because I can see in my clients, like for example, one of my clients, he took his first trip to Disney with his kids, right? And he's like like his company has been listed on the Inc. 5000 like multiple times. First Disney vacation. Started going to Taekwondo with his son on Friday afternoons. Like it's that, it's like, okay, like, you know, it's making a difference in those kids' lives and those kids' lives as well.
Love it. I really, really love what you're doing. You're amazing. So thank you so much for coming on the show.
It was wonderful.
All right. That's it for now. If you're listening and loving what you hear, please like and subscribe. Reviews are great too and much appreciated. And if you're a woman in the middle who's 50 or over and an entrepreneur and would also like to come on the show, please go to www.midlifeinterviews.com and fill out an application. I'd love to have you on to share your story. Thanks so much for listening. It's never too late for you to put yourself on your agenda. I'm Susie Rosenstein, and I'll talk to you again soon. Now, real quick before we say goodbye, if you are connecting with the show, I'd love to invite you to a happiness breakthrough coaching session. It's my laser-focused coaching call that will help you get clear about what's getting in your way as a woman in the middle entrepreneur and confident about your next steps to more happiness in your next chapter. Head over to www.nextchapterbreakthrough.com. Talk to you soon.